All righty, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to another episode of Lakers Detailed. The Lakers are 24 hours removed from... I'm your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj, as always. The Lakers are 24 hours removed from a really good victory against the Denver Nuggets in Game 4 after a, I would say, horrendous performance defensively and effort-wise in Game 3. And now we're down 3-1 going back to Denver. Possibly, you know, I think feels like the Laker fan base is starting to buy, you know, it doesn't take much. We don't really dip our toes into delusion, but we, you know, we take the full dive. That's what being a Laker right. fan is all about. Raj, we're 24 hours removed from that game. How are you doing? I'm sure that was a nice Saturday. Full context, I wasn't watching the game live because I was at a birthday party. Me and my brother and friends were trying to sneak watch it on our phones. It's a little difficult to do. So I didn't get to watch it live. So I wasn't tweeting very much, but I rewatched the game as always. And I thought the Lakers played a really, really great game. But where are you at, man? 24 hours? How far into the can we get another one are you into? Where's your mood at?
Yeah, it's funny because I tweeted this morning, there's nothing better than watching playoff basketball when your team won the previous day. Like, you know, you have a nice, peaceful day of watching hoops. No, I feel like, and this is the wrong way to I guess, put it, but I feel a little bit vindicated of, I think both of us have spoke about how, you know, and it doesn't come off, like the connotation doesn't sound good when you say it's close and you're down 3-0. Like, it's very hard to kind of get people on your side with that. But I think game 4, again, went similarly to how the rest of the games went. We just closed it. We just closed the game correctly. We kept our double-digit lead, and we didn't give it all back in, like, 4 minutes. But, no, like, I haven't jumped all the way into the pool of delusion. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not swimming in it and all that and dipping my head underwater. But I do think there's a slimmer of hope here, and we'll get into it later in terms of Jamal Murray's health and kind of what we're doing and the kind of changes we're doing on the lineup end. But, yeah, Vinay, in my opinion, if you get game 5, then it gets interesting. You can start talking about what you can do going forward. But no, I'm excited, man. I think, like, at least we get one more game. I was tweeting out, you know, push this to Denver, and was being mocked. Like, why you want to push this to Denver, end the series now? And but no, I think the Lakers at least have a shot. The series has kind of gone on. Denver has shot poor enough in all the games to tell me this is more of a trend than just a, you know, coincidence and stuff like that. I think they have a shot. What about you? Where's your head at? I guess a couple hours before game 5.
Yeah. I would say I don't think people realize that outside of that one quarter in game 2 where Jamal Murray got really hot, like, he hasn't had a good series against the Lakers. Like, it's been a pretty rough series for him shooting wise. Like, the Lakers have done a pretty good job corralling him for the most part. You know, obviously, like, MPJ is giving us trouble because that he's like got an unblockable 3-point shot. So it's like, he just makes everything. He like shoots it like he knows he's never going to get blocked. And so that's like a crazy confidence he has on it. Obviously we got the Aaron Gordon game in game 3. But we'll get into those details, Raj. There's some stuff that the Lakers did that they haven't done these past 3 games that I want to get into. But before we do that, we should talk about the slate of games today, because today's slate of games was tremendous.
Immaculate.
The first game, Knicks Sixers, was fantastic. Clippers blowing a 30-point lead and then still managing to close out that game without Kawhi, who was ruled out, was phenomenal game, both ends too as well. Yep. And then this Phoenix game, which was head-to-head before Anthony Edwards like just detonates off of attacking, I think, Bradley Beal, or it might have been Okogie or Bradley Beal. And no, it was Beal. And we got some crazy games today. So we watched all 3 because we're crazy people. what were your takeaways? What were your takeaways from that Knicks game? Obviously, Jalen Brunson setting, I think, a Knicks record for playoff points in a game, something like that, and was a phenomenal guy. A guy who was second fiddle to Luka Doncic for a long time before he made his move. And really, really getting a shine. Talk to me about what you saw in that Knicks game. Like, what did you take away from that Knicks game?
So it's funny, watching that Knicks team, I think, like, you get an answer on terms of what you should value in the playoffs. I think teams kind of have a misidea of what's important. And you just look on the two ends of the spectrum, right, Vinay? You have a team with the Knicks that are gritty, tough, high rebounding, right? Josh Hart comes in, OG Anunoby in a perfect role. And you have the Sixers, which is like really Embiid and shooters, and like just a perfect comparison of this. Buddy Hield, incredible shooter, guy that a lot of people were lauding for in terms of we should trade our first for Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Miles Turner looked really good today. We can get into his kind of play later. But Buddy Hield like did not play, did not get in that game. And the interesting thing to me about the Knicks is they're missing Julius Randle. Vinay, I'm not sure they're not better without Randle. And this is not no shot at Julius Randle or like how good he is. That's an all-star and made all NBA second team last year.
Yeah. Former Laker, we love our former Lakers no matter what.
Although I don't think Julius likes us very much. But you know, we love our former Lakers. No, like I think the playoffs, what's so important is how defined your roles are. Mm-hmm. And it's so clear how defined the roles are on New York. Everything is Jalen Brunson. Everything is through ball screens with him and like Isaiah Hartenstein. Even OG Anunoby, who kind of asked out from Toronto to get a bigger role, doesn't really step out of his lane with them, never really does any craziness, right? He's attacking closeouts. He's attacking off ball screens. He's attacking to the rim. The Knicks are up 3-1, like on Philadelphia with Embiid back. Like that's something that, you know, Philly's going to have to decide over the summer, and maybe they just go into it and you know, I always say Tobias Harris is like the most unserious player in the league, and I think that's a place they can kind of upgrade from, and maybe the guy who just hit like a game-winning step-back fadeaway is the guy they go after in Paul George. But yeah, I think that was really interesting. The Knicks are up 3-1. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I didn't see that coming. I thought this would be a really tight series. I kind of edged Philly. I just thought like Embiid as the former MVP would be able to kind of show his dominance a little bit more, and it's not. Jalen Brunson's going in and putting layups over 7-footers every single time. Talk to me about that game though. Where are you at with that
so game? You know, the Knicks remind me of a team of like, I'm being disrespectful when I say it, but it's a team that like has all the role players that you would want for you to be like a successful basketball team. Like they like Isaiah Hartenstein crashes the glass super hard. He attacks the rim, He like attacks the offensive boards really well. They have DiVincenzo, who can get hot, win you a game. They have Deuce McBride, who's also really good. He kind of stepped into the role that I think Quentin Grimes vacated when they traded him to Detroit. OG, tough guy, another tough guy, will rebound, do a lot. Like none of these guys, when you hear them, you're thinking to yourself, oh, this guy, you can lock him in for 25, 30 a night and XYZ. You know, he's going to do what you want him to do. And then you have a guy who I think is – I don't think he's underrated. I don't think Knicks fans would say it's underrated. I don't even think Lakers fans would say he's underrated. But Josh Hart, I think every team, every championship team has a Josh Hart, like every single one. And, like, we had a version of that with, like – I mean, Hart was on our team, but we also had a version of that in, like, Alex Caruso. Guys who get that extra rebound, who play the defense that you need them to play, who – get some tough buckets, you know, when everything's starting to look ugly and stuff like that. That's a huge deal. And then they have the guy that they just, you know, kind of like an Iverson type, you know, just keep feeding him the ball. If he has to pound the ball a lot to get a shot off, just trust that he'll take an in-control shot and not put yourself, you know, not turn it over, stuff like that. And that this Knicks team reminds me of, like, it's not like the same version, but that Sixers team that had Iverson on it. Like, I know there's that thing that came out a while back where they said that, like, somebody at ESPN said that, like, Jalen Brunson's not a number one. And
right.
Like, the Knicks don't have a true number one on the team. And I'm not saying that you have to have a number one or you don't, but they're doing really well for a team that doesn't have a number one. You know what I mean? Like you don't just put up 40 in a playoff game off the strength of just luck or something like that. Regular season, that'll happen. You'll get some random dude scoring super high. But they play like a team that Sixers team. We know who our go-to guy is. We're going to feed it to him. We're going to trust his decision-making when he's open. And the rest of us are going to scrap for every single point that we can get. And I mean, the Sixers played really tough and Beat's playing through a lot, you know, the knee injury and all that sort of stuff. And Maxey's been phenomenal. And, you know, Oubre and Tobias have been up and down, whatever it is, they're role players. But this Knicks team, they are committed to their identity. Tibbs has got them playing like a bunch of, I don't know, like just got a bunch of guys who play prison ball, and they're going to turn the game into that.
That's the last point I was going to make on them. We just watched Anthony Edwards absolutely dismantle the Phoenix Suns in every which way. But I think if you like look past that, which I know is tough for a lot of Suns fans, I'm sure this summer. But if you look past that, it was a team that did not, to me, Vinay, match their coach's style. Like, it's very clear Frank Vogel and his roster were on opposite ends of just basketball philosophy, right? Like, I don't think Frank Vogel really wants to play a big man who, like, can't protect the rim.
Yeah.
Doesn't catch lobs. Is not a rim, like, you know what I mean? And so, yeah. And he also has a bunch of players who aren't physical, who at the point of attack can't pressure the ball. You can't pressure all game with Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. You just can't. Or and Grayson Allen. And those are just one part of it. I just think they're on opposite ends. And then you watch the Knicks. I feel like Tibbs and Jalen Brunson, after every game, do like maniacal laughs to each other. Like it's very, they're very much in lockstep. And that team is very much the identity of Tibbs and the identity of their star in Jalen Brunson. They're a tough, gritty MF-er team. And Tibbs is that type of dude who's going to play you 46, 7 minutes. And Jalen Brunson's the type of guy, like, yeah, I don't want to sit out. You know, so it's like a very nice symbiotic relationship that they have. And so, yeah, that's like their identity is so, they're not the best team in the East. Like, they should lose to, you know, whoever, well, I don't know who they play next, but like, obviously they're not going to be favored over Boston or whatever, but no, that team has definitely found its identity and it's built in a way that you could tell that it was very precise in terms of how they wanted to build out that roster. So no, yeah. Credit to them.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the Knicks are, you know, whoever wins the Pacers Bucks series is who the Knicks would get next. So if it ends up being the Pacers with all the injuries that team has had, that's probably going to be the direction that you know, all the that's going to be the direction to be by a high octane game, I would say, because it's going to be a lot of up and down basketball, I would imagine. Pacers play super fast if they win that series. Also, that would be kind of a funny storyline because OG is now with the Knicks and Siakam, two former teammates, is now with the Pacers. Great. So. Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting to watch those two guys. They'll probably end up having to defend each other. That'll be interesting to see. So let's fast forward to the next game, Raj. The next game that we had sort of on the docket was this Clippers Mavs game, which was which was something to watch. Clippers come out great, like super hot, hot. They're making 10 every contested shot. 10 of 15 from 3. Yeah, every contested shot, every shot's contested. Paul George is possessed in the first quarter, making every shot. And then Luka's not having a good game, I would say. But I think at the midway point of the second quarter, Kyrie hits 3 threes in a row in transition, just pull-up threes, which if he misses would be horrendous shots, but he makes them. So he's a hero for making those. Mm-hmm. And they keep chipping away up until they get it to basically a tie game with about 2-3 minutes left. And it turns into the James Harden and Paul and Kyrie show with a little bit of Paul George, a little bit of Luka mixed into it. And that was a phenomenal game. The defense kind of died a little bit. Like, nobody was playing defense anymore. It just turned into who can make the most difficult shot. But that was a great game. The shot that stands out to me, outside of all the floaters that James Harden hits, the two shots, I'm sure they'll be the same for you, that Kyrie double pump over 3 Clippers.
Should have been and one.
With the trailing hand. Yeah, the trailing hand. And that Paul George isolation into the sidestep corner 3-2. I think those shots were back to back. Those are outrageous. It's just outrageous shot making.
Insane.
I thought that was a great game. But the other news is Kawhi didn't play. Kawhi got hurt. And this has been like a reoccurring issue for this Clippers team. Like, he can't make it into April, and I don't know if it's a playing too many games thing or it's just his body can't hold up, period, to really physical basketball. So there's two ways to think about it. What were your takeaways? What do you think of those games? What direction do you think it goes in? Because I don't know if Kawhi comes back the next game, so that could definitely tip the scales.
Yeah, I don't think he does. I think it's very clear he tried to give it a go and it just wasn't going. And look, you don't wish for that. Hopefully, you know, you want the stars to play in the playoffs. I think the Clippers kind of needed just some finality on that, right? Just like some final decision. And I think when they told the Clippers that he wasn't going to play, it kind of, again, we talked about this with the Knicks, it identified everybody's role. So Paul George knows he has to be aggressive. There's no getting Kawhi going, right? None of that. Not that that should matter in terms of a playoff sense, but Kawhi is such a huge part of their team. He's going to be a guy that you try to get involved. And James Harden. I think the Mavs, Vinay, are kind of betting on James Harden not wanting to be a volume scorer. Like, I think they're betting on that, right? Like, you want to make the lob pass. You want to make the skip pass. We're taking all the way. You have to shoot every time. And credit to Harden. He went down, took a floater, I believe, like 8 times in the fourth quarter. Made 7 of them, I think. Got to the line on an and one as well. I think that's what the Mavs were betting on. And Luka has to get free in this series. Like, he struggled, I think. Russ is, like, full court pressuring him. Terrence Mann is being super physical. They've set the physical bar, Vinay, on Luka so high that the refs can't really pull it down. Like, the refs can't call everything. So Luka's kind of getting picked up full court, and they're being really physical with him. And, yeah, man, that shot making, that Paul George shot reminded me of the Jamal Murray shot. Like, it's just perfectly, perfectly contested. Even the footwork, if you watch that, like, 90% of players step out of bounds on that. Like, you know, he timed his footwork to get behind the three-point line and not to get it out of bounds, and somehow shot it on the side of the backboard and swished it. It wasn't even close. Like, that thing swished in. No, incredible shot making. Kyrie tried to keep them alive. Kyrie got going in the second half. 0 points, I believe, in the first half. 28 in the second half. Luka had a triple-double, but I thought he had a really rough game again. And look, like, can Harden and PG, who kind of have this reputation, Vinay, of guys in the playoffs who have high variance, and they just had an incredible game. So we'll see what happens in game 5. But I don't know if you can beat the Mavs without Kawhi. I think there's a talent gap there. These teams feel pretty even to me, and that's kind of how a 2-2 series plays out. But I think without Kawhi, the talent is just kind of leaning in Dallas's favor. Do you agree with me on that? I think they'll have a hard time winning this series without a healthy Kawhi Leonard.
So, you know, I agree with you that it'll be a hard time, but I just don't know if it's impossible, only because I feel like Dallas plays much more predictable ISO ball than the Clippers do. Like, the Clippers still run some sets to get, like, Norm Powell open. They still look to they look to do different kinds of things to get other guys involved. I just don't know. If that, like, Dallas has to come out and, like, Luka and Kyrie have to be, like, lights out. Like, the game they stole from in LA, like, they were shooting lights out. Like, they were making every open three was getting knocked out. PJ Washington's going crazy every single time. And so, like, I mean, obviously there's also a situation where, like, you know, James Harden's been, like, on and off every other game. Same thing with Paul George, has been on and off kind of every other game. So that'll be very interesting to see. But I don't know. I think these teams are more evenly matched now with Kawhi out. I thought Kawhi would have tipped the scales in the Clippers' favor, but now it's just, I feel like it's anybody's game. It could go either direction. And so it'll be very, very interesting to see just kind of who wins. I think the battle in the paint kind of decides everything. Like, who gets the extra rebounds, who wins the points in the paint, that sort of thing. And whatnot. I'm going to tell you something, Raj. You know, I'm a Russ guy. I've always been a Russ guy. He had a rough stretch. Like, he was okay, and he didn't really do too much. He was, like, just fine playing his role. He's really meant to be just like that defensive guy, that defensive sub for Terrence Mann. But he had a nice stretch. I think when they cut it to 4, he had a nice stretch where I think PG hit him on a short roll. He sets up Mason Plumlee for the lob.
Yep,
that was good. And then the very next play, he crashes baseline on a Mason Plumlee crash from the baseline and gets a tough layup over, like, Kleber and I want to say PJ Washington over 2 guys. And I think he gets subbed out eventually a little bit later. But I was happy that he didn't have, like, an implosion, because it felt like this game was, like, earmarked for, like, Russ is going to have, like, a really bad shot or something like that, and it's going to go viral. But, you know, I, dude, it's just the shot making from the Clippers. I'm like, that's just high level shot making. And Kyrie's on drugs, dude. I don't know what to say. Like, sometimes he just shows it to games and he's just unconscious with some of the shots that he takes.
Absurd. The 1-3 Kyrie had where he, like, pump faked, I think it was Plumlee, and then side into a, like, sidestep 3 and just swished it. I was like, oh my goodness.
He's a drunk fan.
No, he's insane. Russ had a really good, like, I think Russ has been important for them defensively, like, in terms of ball pressuring Luka, and he's just super aggressive. And I think Russ is just trying to get under the Mavericks' skin. So, like,
100%.
I think that's a role that he's done. I think there was a point, and I think this just happens in the flow of the game, where he was just taking a lot of the corner threes. Dallas's whole game plan was, we're leaving the corner shooter, whether that's Russ or Terrence Mann. and man made a few. I think Russ took like 4 or 5 or 6 threes. Yeah. I forgot that didn't go in. So I saw people kind of calling for like, hey, you need to change that up, which I think it's tough to kind of know where his role is in terms of offensively when you're playing next to Harden and Zoo, like, and Terrence, man, like it's a tough kind of spacing issue. But no, he's helped them for sure. He's helped them defensively.
Yeah, I mean, today he only took 2 threes and he made 1. You might be thinking of the last game, because the last game I think he took 6 threes and he missed all but 1. So last game was bad. He got ejected from that game. It was terrible. But
right.
The funniest sequence with him, because he always has a funny sequence that makes me laugh. Gets 2 free throws, bricks both free throws, steals the outlet pass. After the guy rebounds his second miss, I think he attacked the rim, or he might have attacked the rim, misses the layup. It's just the whole sequence is super funny to me. And I was just like, this is about right. This is like the Russ experience.
the turnover.
This is just kind of how that works. So, you know, it is what it is. But that was a great game. And then we fast forward to the Suns Wolves game, which was
I'm glad you skipped Bucks Pacers, because I watched very little of that.
I watched Yeah, and then I found out that Chris Middleton got hurt. I mean, the Bucks have just been hammered by injuries. That's been really tough. There's not much to cover. The only thing I do want to say is that the double move by Tyrese Haliburton to end the game on Pat Beverley on his game winner.
Two games ago, or last game.
Yeah, last game. That was super nice, because Pat was loaded up for him to try and drive down the sideline, and Tyrese hits him with a second cross. Back to his left and completely catches Amar off guard for that floater.
My favorite part of that is, I guess Bucks people said this later, Dame told Doc, like, don't pull me out for defensive possessions. Like, you don't need to. but Doc pulled Dame anyway for that defensive possession. So Dame had to watch Pat, like, get crossed and then hit him on the head for an and one. And, like, I love it. If you watch the replay, like, you'll just see Dame have a Gatorade, like, in his mouth while Pat is, like, hitting him in the head. It's, like, a beautiful
funny, image. That's super funny. That cracked me up. But, I mean, Tyrese, it's a nice moment for Tyrese, too, because he's one of the up-and-coming guys. You know, he's on the Olympic team, too, as well. So, moving ahead, let's get to the Suns-Wolves. If I was a Wolves fan or a Suns fan, I could probably do an hour on this. But this series, Suns get swept. It's going to be a lot made about, you know, KD. I mean, he's going to get piled on because he's the easiest guy. Devin Booker just kind of being okay. He had a big game today, but just kind of didn't, like, scoring a lot of points when you can't defend your position doesn't really do much when you're giving up 35 yourself. Brad Beal has a terrible game. Frank Vogel's been on the hot seat for weeks now. I feel like he's been on the hot seat before they even made it to the playoffs. He might be the fall guy for that team. Maybe not. We'll see what happens. But this was a series which was a very big contrast of styles. A team that is very finesse focused. The Suns versus a team that is not finesse. They are all brute force. We're going to bully you as much as we possibly can on both ends of the court. And the Wolves sweep the Suns. Talk to me about just any thoughts on the series as a whole, or just whatever you saw from the game today.
Yeah, like the Suns play such an uninspiring brand of basketball. Like, I feel like, you know, like, it's just very little creativity. They build zero bridges between their stars. Like, there's just no connectivity between one star or the other. It feels like KD, Beal, and Book are playing on islands. And that's just a really tough way to beat a team like Minnesota. And again, it's like, what do you... Like, the Suns were missing Grayson Allen, so, like, I'm going to put that out there as well. That's a guy that I'm sure that really played well for them as a starter. But again, it's like, it's very much tough jump shots on every possession, even when they're playing well. Even Booker dropping 40. A lot of that is, like, really difficult shots in transition off pull-up jump shots. And I'm still going to say this is Minnesota taking this, though. Like, you know, like, there's the term – I tweeted about this on your post of the SG1 that the – the propaganda.
SG1, man. That's what I'm going to call them moving forward.
That's what you're pushing. But, like, there's this idea that torches are passed down, right? It's some very nice ceremonial, you know, occurrence where, you know, a torch is here and the guy says, hey, man, you've earned it. Here's the torch being passed. No, that's not how it works at all. A torch is viciously taken out of someone's hands.
Yeah.
And Anthony Edwards viciously took that torch. What it reminded me of Vinay is remember we played the Thunder? I believe it was 2013 or 20. Yeah. I forgot what series it was. We played them in the first round. I think we were the lower, or it was like a 4 or 5. Or 3, I don't remember what the seeding was. They kicked our ass. Yeah. And it was the lockout. It was after the lockout year, whatever year that was. It was kind of KD's coming out as like, oh shit, like this dude is absolutely unguardable. He averaged like 30 in the regular season, but yeah, that's what it felt like to me. And I love Anthony Edwards just talking shit to Devin Booker at the end of it too. Just like, no friendly stuff. We swept you. Like, get off this court. Like, I love the energy. And guys, he had a play today where he hit like a pull-up jump shot fade away and then went and blocked Devin Booker at the rim. I was like, oh, yeah, that's different. There's not many stars who are doing that. And not many stars have the physical gifts he has either, but just the being that special offensively and still locking down defensively. I think that's just unique. That's not something that most stars do. So Minnesota took this from the grasp of Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker is going to have a long summer to kind of think about this. But no, this was the Anthony Edwards show, man. And Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, all these dudes would break out. So we'll see. Wolves are a really good team, man. I think I might even pick them over Denver.
Yeah.
That's what I've seen in the playoffs. But what's your kind of synopsis of the series?
Yeah, I think the NBA has always been about defense and rebounding, and the teams that play better, who can defend physically without fouling, and can rebound the basketball on both ends, offensively and defensively, are the ones that typically win. Shot making matters. It always will matter. That's always a thing that's going to matter. But every team that's been good at that is the one that tends to win. Like, the reason why the Knicks win is because they rebound. Like, all four or five of those guys on the floor will go and crash their glass on misses, and they'll defend because that's Tibbs' identity when he does stuff like that. And I think Denver is that same way, and I think Minnesota is that same way. I would go as far as saying with that series that, like, if it ends up being, Denver-Minnesota, whoever wins that series just probably has a pretty decent, assuming everybody's healthy, has a really decent chance of winning the entire thing, because just the formula is just, it's hard to beat that formula in a game in the playoffs where all the possessions are finite. It's much more, more limited. People play with slower pace. But yeah, it's just a contrast of style. I don't think the style of basketball the Suns play, no matter how much shooting talent that they have, is a sustainable style, because you can't spread, like, unless you have a rim defender, like Gobert, like, then maybe you could do it. But even then, it's still hard to do when you have, like, they put Jaden McDaniels on Booker.
Yeah.
And you know, if Book's not drawing a foul, it's a tough shot for him. It's not easy for him. And then Ant will pick up Beal straight up. You know, I keep calling him SG1 because the best players at your position will defend the guy at their position. They won't be like, no, I'm going to go guard the non-shooter. I'm going to send my, you know, the defensive specialist to go guard the other guy. Like, if you put Ant on Book, Ant's like, all right, I'm guarding Book. If you put Ant on Beal, he's like, oh, I'm going to guard Beal. Same thing with Durant. He's like, oh, you want to switch on to me? Okay, I'm going to guard Durant now. So those are the teams that win. I just think, I'm not shocked. I picked Minnesota to beat the Suns in my the pick'em thing that I do, the pool that I do, because I didn't think the style that the Suns played would be sustainable.
Yeah, I didn't think they would get swept, but I think the Suns, they have a similar issue to the Lakers and to the Clippers to a lesser extent. Their stars need to also, Vinay, be the motor, dirty work, you know what I mean? The hard rebound dudes. And like, I think that's really tough to ask Kevin Durant to drop 28 on jump shots and then also be the guy that goes and boxes out Towns and Gobert every time. That's a tough ask. And like, Kevin Durant played a lot of center in this series as well, because Drew Banks, I guess, wasn't playable. And is it Bol Bol? I don't know if Bol Bol is even available or not, or if that's a real thing that's going on. But he was playing in their regular season, right? There were like Bol Bol highlights up and down the timeline. But yeah, I think that's a really tough ask for him to like also do that. And they have no one who gets to the rim, no one who pressures the basket.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
I think Beal was like, I don't know what you make of Beal, Vinay. I think like seeing Beal in a light of where things matter, it just looks like a player that, obviously he's not the player he was in Washington, at least I don't think so. Like when they were winning 50 games a year next to John Wall. But yeah, I don't know. Beal just does not look like a star, and like that's very destructive for a team paying Bradley Beal $60 million next year. That's a Very tough place to be with a no trade contract as well, where you can't even move that money if you wanted to, because Bradley Beal would have to sign off on it. So, yeah, they're in a really peculiar situation. I think Frank Vogel is getting fired. Like, I think he's gone.
Oh my god, Shams already posted an article, like an autopsy article, like 9 minutes after the game is over. He hasn't said that he's gonna get fired, but it's basically like the little things they're hitting are, you know, the excerpts or the screenshots are hitting the timeline right now. It's just like the players weren't taking Vogel seriously, XYZ, that sort of stuff. So it's just,
oh, he's gone.
Vogel's gonna be the fall guy for sure. He's gonna be the fall guy for this, but it's just like, I mean, we watched Vogel in LA. Like, we knew the difference between a Vogel defense and a non-Vogel defense, and this was not a Vogel defense.
No,
they basically
wanted, they built the antithesis of Frank Vogel. Yeah. Like, they brought in the coach that's the absolute antithesis of what your coach loves and wants. And look, Frank Vogel was like, "Hey, look, you're gonna give me a 4-year deal, and you're gonna put me back into one of the ranks of a head coach. I'll take the job." But
he'll do it.
But Frank Vogel, I think, is gone. Did you see the little, before we move on? Did you see a little Bradley Beal, Frank Vogel? I guess mix up on the sideline.
Or like, no, I didn't see that. What happened to that?
Frank Vogel was trying to high five Beal, and Beal kind of just shoved his hand away in a, you know, I guess in not a friendly manner.
It can't be any worse than pick any single Bron body language interaction with Darvin Ham. I'm sure the game for Bron jumping around up and down. Stuff like that, just completely overshadowed. So I didn't get to watch it live, but then I was looking at my timeline afterwards, and all I saw was like that clip of just Bron being super, super upset about the challenge that didn't get called. And then I kept reading, and then I would see some comments just like, well, he used the challenge later and then won whatever the play was. I think a D'Lo asked for a challenge and they got the challenge. Yes, then I started seeing comments like, oh, Darvin Ham doesn't trust LeBron to call a challenge, but he trusts D'Lo to call a challenge. And I was just like, I got to watch this game because I don't know what the context is of any of this stuff. Like, why did he not call it and stuff like that? And then I watched it and I was just like, yeah, he probably could have called the challenge. But I was just like, yeah, but it's also like, you know, you're up 15. You probably don't need to call that challenge. You can probably save it till later. And he used it. So, you know, it's good that he just didn't hold it for no reason altogether. But
yeah.
That's all I had on those three games. So we can just get into game four, Raj. Like, do you want to talk about that? Like, because that was like a big thing. Like, they played a great game, but that was like a big thing that, you know, the thing that Twitter and Lakers Twitter loves to do is take that one thing and overshadow all the good that happened.
Let's start there. I don't think I've ever seen LeBron. Obviously, he has his. This is one of my issues with this team too, Vinay, is the amount of passive aggressive stuff that goes on. I'm not just talking about LeBron, honestly. I'm like, the D'Lo quote to Dave McMenamin after, you know, he drops 40 and says that Dennis Schroeder is the reason he can't talk to Darvin Ham, and like, he says that to a reporter after a game, not to the coach or any player. So this kind of falls in line with some of that. But like, I usually don't see, like, obviously LeBron has his stuff with Darvin Ham, it's been all reported, but you don't see him, I've never seen him that animated and like very pointing at a specific part of our team, right? Like, that's very much, if you're super pissed at the coach or super pissed about the challenge, you're aiming that at the coach, right? And like, Darvin Ham's the one that challenges or not, like, he's the one that decides. So I think that was at him, and I have no problem with some disagreements on there. It's just that you don't usually see him animated. My thing on the challenge thing, I think coaches, they want to, they'll lose the battle to win the war on these type of stuff, right? It's, you know what I mean? Like, Mike Malone on one of them, it was the first quarter of an A. Jamal Murray asked for a challenge on a play. I forgot what play it was. It was in game four. And Malone goes ahead and challenges it. He loses the challenge. So he's done. And I think anyone watching was like, why would you challenge that in the first quarter? It's out of bounds. That was kind of unclear to both teams. But I think Malone's like, my star is begging for this challenge. I'm going to lose the battle to win the war. So I kind of see kind of where some of that is. And LeBron had his back turned and just didn't play defense either that possession, and just the Nuggets scored as well. So he was really pissed. But that's kind of how I saw that. I think the challenge stuff is kind of tricky there. I think Darvin sometimes, like, games end, Vinay, where Darvin never challenges anything. Like, he'll
fair. Yeah.
He'll end games with no challenges at all, and you know, in places where they would affect the game. So that's how I saw. I don't think it was that big a deal. I think, like, I kind of like a little bit more public disagreement than this passive aggressive, like, I don't like this guy 10 days after we're out of this stuff, like, which feels like happening with Phoenix, you know, like the stories that are coming out with them. So I don't mind it, man. Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra are cussing each other out on the sidelines. Like, yeah, that's the best coach in the league to most people, and his star player cussing each other out. Deal with it right there. I like that. Like, if there's a disagreement, don't give me this passive aggressive shit. But where are you at with that? I guess.
Yeah, no. So when I watched it in real time, I was like, okay, I understand why Bron is so upset. About the.
It was clearly off KCP. Like that's a clear, and it's in front of our bench. Yeah. Like someone should have seen it.
Yeah, so I'm all for that. You know, I'm sure somebody was sitting on the bench right behind the main bench, you know, because they have those little video cameras where they can watch the broadcast and see what that play is too as well. I totally understand that. I understand them not wanting to do that. I don't think it was like a –
You're up 14, fourth quarter. Like,
if I take my emotion out of it, I was just like, okay, I understand what he's doing here. There's still a ton of time left. There might be a 50-50 call that they need to save that for later, you know? Because I want to say Denver did go on a little bit of a run to make it a little bit of a, like, they got it to like 9 points or something like that. And then before the Lakers, extended it back out again. So, like, I kind of get that. I don't really fault them for it. I guess the strange part is that like I understand why it's happening, because we didn't challenge that touch foul on Murray in game two when he got the two free throws on Bron.
Yes.
So I think that for the Bron folks, that carried over into the like, oh, you're not going to call it now either when Bron is like, you don't trust him, XYZ, whatever. I don't think it's like that. I don't think like Ham is sitting there and saying, F LeBron. Like, I don't care about LeBron. No. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like that. And I think every time there is a perceived conflict between those two people, it turns into one guy actually hates the other guy. Like, you know, Bron folk will say Bron hates Ham, but then they also say Ham hates LeBron, which is like, I get you're doing it for your guy. I don't know why you're doing it the other way. Why would the coach hate the player? You know, it's not like we don't run plays that include Bron. Anyways, that's a whole different conversation in itself. But I just think they probably just saw there was a lot of time there. And, you know, Lakers ultimately ended up winning the game by double digits. So ended up being successful. I was very shocked to see so much on it. Like, there was a lot of people tweeting about that. And I was just like, in the context of the entire game, this was not a serious moment in the game to be that upset. No. Not LeBron, but like, for fans to be upset about it. But, you know, it is what it is. Bron folks will rock with Bron. And it's hating Ham is hot stuff, man. That gets the timeline moving. So makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like, I just think again, I think that's a good point with it's kind of a carry on from game two. And look, maybe that cost him the game. We'll never know. Like, I have no idea. In my heart, Vinay, I don't think they would have reversed that call. The game two one. I don't know what you think.
Tough. See, because it's just we didn't get the angle. Like, if I could see the other angle, because the broadcast never showed it to us, or maybe I missed it. I could only see the angle with Jamal's back to us, where he kind of runs into Bron. I couldn't see whether he ran into Bron and like Bron extended with his hand to push him away, because it didn't look like Bron did that. It seemed like Bron was almost caught off guard that Jamal ran into him.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah. I just think like. In Denver, you know, and LeBron's arm does get contact with Jamal Murray's back. So, like, in my opinion, I don't think they would have reversed it. Not that he shouldn't have challenging would have been the correct rule there. So, no, it didn't have a, you know, George is saying maybe not a big deal because the Lakers won game four. Like, maybe, like, you know, the Denver did kind of push it down to seven. Yeah. And, like, if you lose that game, then, yeah, this is much more of a – if our season ends, Vinay, and that this happened – oh, this is number one on first. Like this little subsection, this little clip is going triple platinum or however, you know, that works in the media sphere. Yeah. But since the Lakers won, it's not a big deal. And I think there's both sides of it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So let's get into the schematic or the stuff that was different from what happened in game three. So game three, a lot of it was not really on the offensive end. It was just us not playing any good defense. You know, we all said what we had to say in game three, so I don't need to rehash my tweets, which I don't know. Again, I don't know why my tweets gain the kind of traction they do sometimes, because I don't even have as many followers as you do, Raj. And you have like double or triple the amount of followers that I do. But I just tweet like one sentence very vaguely, and somehow everybody's just
Everyone knows what you mean. I mean, let's be clear about that.
You know what I mean? I'll tell you what. People are upset at me for tweeting that, but nobody's upset at every single quote tweet that came in blaming LeBron James. Bron wasn't the only guy that wasn't boxing out. There were times like where Rui forgot to box out. But we know who the original assignment was that was just getting backdoored the entire time. And people get so upset. It's just like, Raj, I mean, you know the DMs that I get from folks.
I understand.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, for me, it's always just about basketball. I don't really care about anything else.
And you were right, by the way. Like LeBron wasn't boxing out. But I went, so I went back and watched game three, even after like my emotions died down. Honestly, we quit early third quarter. That was a game that we just completely quit. And like you could spotlight LeBron there, and you're right. Aaron Gordon got 30 backdoor cuts. But I also watched everyone else's. And maybe this is like maybe they're feeding onto our stars' energy level. It's just once Michael Porter Jr. in the third, I believe, Vinay hit like three straight step back jump shots, you know. And like contested is a vague word because of who's contesting it. But in any case, he hit all those jumpers. Game was kind of done. Like I saw the life kind of leave the team. So it was hard for me to take schematic stuff out of that. But you're right. Like that's the assignment. Now, like we said this all year, is it a fair ask? Probably not. But is it the ask? It is the ask. Like that's the responsibility. And that's a tough part. Yeah. So let's get into game four. Where you want to start, I guess.
So I wanted to bring that part up because I wanted to immediately start with their defensive effort in game four was significantly better. Aaron Gordon wasn't crashing as much. I think he tried early in the game, but wasn't getting like the real opportunities that he wanted. He was covered. So I thought the Lakers did a really, really good job on the defensive glass in that game too as well. The effort was so good that I actually remember a play where I think LeBron gets beat by Jamal Murray going to the rim. LeBron blocks a shot at the rim. I think Denver doesn't score. Lakers go down, try to score. They don't score. Denver actually gets a breakaway, a 3-on-2, I want to say, that actually gets blown up because Rui Hachimura runs down the floor late but still runs down and gets a block on I think Aaron Gordon throws a pass to MPJ. MPJ throws another pass back to Aaron Gordon on a 3-on-2, and Rui runs it down and blocks Aaron Gordon. Like that kind of effort, just the extra effort stuff that we saw from the team was really, really huge. And that was like the first thing I wanted to talk about. Like that, the defensive effort from the team has to at least be at a base, and then the rebounding has to be at a baseline level. Because if it's not at a baseline level of we're going to limit offensive rebounds as much as possible and limit the broken play open shots that we give up as much as possible, you're not even in the same building as Denver. Like if you can't do that. And so I thought the Lakers doing that was a good thing. They've done it before, but they just haven't done it for 48 minutes of a game like they did in game four. I think that has to happen again in game five. They're capable of doing it because we've seen them do it twice already in Denver. It's got to be for the entire game. Where are you at with that? The contrast in defense. Where are you at with the importance of that?
Yeah, I think that was Aaron Gordon's worst game like he's played in this series. Gordon, Vinay, I think, had like 7 points and 3 rebounds.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that like gets 6 offensive rebounds a game. And this was the first game we won the rebounding battle as well. And again, that's a lot of that is still Anthony Davis. So I don't know how much that is like, you know, you can take over that. AD had, I think, 50% of our rebounds. Vinay, like he had 20, I think he had like 23 rebounds that he finished with, just an absurd night from him. That's another guy. Is that a fair ask? I don't know, but that, like, I guess that's the ask. We did a lot less, Vinay, of Rui on Jokic. And so when we have Rui on Jokic, and Rui actually got benched, and we can get into that like in the later on in terms of like how we won this game on the offensive end. But what happens though when Rui's on Jokic, when we double, like Rui boxing out Jokic is such a mismatch. I think has kind of had its kind of wore down as the series has gone on. So like every time Rui's on Jokic, Jokic just volleyballs that, and he gets like and ones out of it, gets touches into it. We kind of cleaned that up. Jokic still had an incredible game, but I thought AD was able to box him out a little bit more. Again, your point, I thought LeBron was super engaged on that end. LeBron was blowing up coverages. Jamal Murray was a little bit, you know, hobbled, I thought, in the fourth, but LeBron got a bunch of steals on him, got some breakaway dunks out of that. No, our defensive engagement was good. And I think like Gabe and Austin, I don't know, Vinay, how you feel about the defense on Jamal Murray. I think it's been good. Like, I think we've defended him well. He's had 4 straight subpar shooting games, like knock on wood. Like He has not shot well, so we'll see. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But Jamal Murray has not shot well in this series. You take out the fourth quarter of game two, and he's kind of struggled on the offensive end. And I think a lot of that is because we're kind of forcing them. We're kind of putting Jamal Murray in situations to take tougher shots. Like, I think we're kind of taking away his snake dribble into the pull-ups that, you know, are clean walk-ins for him. We're kind of taking away the rim as well, forcing him to AD. I love the Jackson Hayes minutes in game four.
Yeah.
He allows you to blitz Jamal Murray in a way that, you know, you can't do in, with any other center on the floor. So, like, we've kind of mixed up, played bigger, and just I think you need more high-motor guys out there. Like, that's why I think Jackson Hayes is great. Bando's questionable for game five, so we'll see if he can play. I think that's another just high motor guy to throw out there. I think that's important. I think LeBron and AD, Vinny, have been gassed in the fourth quarter of every one of these games. AD had 4 points in the second half, I believe, or fourth quarter. I forgot what it was. And I think, like, these guys are just gassed to the end. LeBron had 14 in the fourth, but I think he's allowed to do that because D'Lo had his 20 or whatever it was, like, throughout the game. And Austin contributed his 21 points. So, that, like, I think those guys also need to be fresh as well. But you're right. The defense has stepped up. We'll see if it transfers to Denver. I'm expecting Denver to punch really hard out the gate. But I think we can stay with them, at least stay attached. But what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think the way you summed it up was really nice. Like, the way this game, the hierarchy of this game went is sort of like the most ideal version of how it works for the Lakers. It's getting D'Lo, getting contributions from D'Lo, Austin, and AD for those three quarters to maintain a lead or just maintain the momentum and then allow LeBron to kind of do what he does. So then LeBron can pace himself through those three quarters and then eventually do what he does in the fourth quarter. And I thought this game was one of those games where it's just like, we got that. You know, we got sort of that pacing and stuff like that. And I thought one of the things that the Lakers did really well, which is something that they haven't done, we kind of wanted them to do it after game two. And I'm surprised they didn't do it in game three. Maybe game three just kind of went away, and so they just opted not to do it. Game four, they put Bron in the post a lot. Like, they had him when every time MPJ caught him on a switch, or he got a switch for with Jamal Murray on the switch, he would post him up. And it was exactly the type of post-up that we expected, which is the D'Lo's on the same side, strong side. He's one pass away. And basically Denver has to decide if they're going to double Bron in the post against Jamal Murray or not. And, you know, more often than not, they never did. And as a result, Bron scored in the post. And that was really nice, effective offense, I thought. Bron and his face-up basketball against Denver defenders has been okay. It hasn't been what we thought it would be. He's older. The first step isn't quite there. He doesn't turn the corner the same way against, you know, smaller, faster guys because they're trying to push him in a certain direction. There have been times where they try to take away, like, his left hand completely, and they want to force him to his other hand, or sorry, his right hand completely, and they only want him to go left because because they think that he won't finish with his left as well through multiple defenders. He got going. I felt like he was in a nice rhythm, and we were able to get scoring out of him and get advantage plays out of him. Out of that plus. What do you think about them going with those possessions?
Yeah, I think that's what I've kind of been asking for. And even with Aaron Gordon, Vinay, he attacked him a little bit differently.
Yeah.
He was able to go at him a little bit more in the pick and roll. And they, since we didn't play Rui as much, Jokic couldn't hide. And I thought that's a really interesting wrinkle. We closed, Vinay, with Torian Prince. Right. So I don't know how much LeBron finished with, but he had 14, I believe, in the fourth quarter. A lot of that was attacking off the pick and roll. They had Aaron Gordon on him, but since it was Jokic, the one screening, LeBron was able to go right at him. I loved your point about putting him in the post. He was going at Jamal Murray again, who was looked hobbled a little bit I believe the ankle or the, I forgot. The calf.
He has a left calf strain, apparently.
Left calf strain, which, you know, I'm just going to go into Monday. Believe me, it's going to be 300%. Like, when we get to that game. But no, LeBron was attacking the post. And the other thing we were doing, Vinay, we put LeBron off the ball. We put LeBron on the, like, so LeBron took Rui's role, right? Yes. Like, as the cutter. And they kind of had Rui's cut scouted, right? And Rui's just not as dynamic of a cutter as LeBron, because I don't have to get into detail. It's just LeBron as a cutter. And I think this is very important because we also, like, Austin came in late, Vinay, came in with like 4 or 3 minutes left in the game when it was kind of, it was handled, but we were having D'Lo on the ball, and D'Lo's threes were going in, his step back threes were going in, and I know D'Lo is probably the most polarizing figure in Los Angeles right now, in terms of like what he's doing, posting I don't give a F what you think quotes on Instagram, and
interesting post game quotes too about Ham that got turned into an anti Ham thing, and I was just on Twitter, and then the actual like tone of the way he it was two different things, but Twitter is going to do what Twitter does. But go ahead.
Right. Yeah. I think Darvin Ham said they said Darvin Ham believes in you, and he said that's nice, kind of, you know. But very conspicuous quotes and stuff like that. But I think it's important. D'Lo has an offensive game. He's kind of off the pick and rolls, and Jokic had to sit at the level of the screen, and KCP was fighting over, and a lot of plays. Vinay, we got 80 on the short roll, and he found LeBron cutting, and then like the play that kind of ended the game was D'Lo coming off a pick and roll, LeBron's cutting. He catches, I think, Aaron Gordon ball watching, and catches a lob on a no-look pass from D'Lo. Yep. I think that's important. D'Lo's been doing this Jekyll and Hyde kind of game where, bad one game, good one game, bad one game, good one game. And I think we're going to need to hit green twice in a row here. And, to shout out roulette, D'Lo's going to have to hit, green again. But I think those are kind of the changes to me. LeBron off the ball, I think that's interesting. I think that's something that I think you can kind of leverage LeBron's physicality in a way there that's a little different than him just pounding the rock. Because I think that's where Denver's at their best, Vinay, when they are so disciplined and to the point where if they know your attack's coming from the top of the key, they can fixture their defense in a way to kind of plan for that, right? Like if KCP is guarding LeBron at the top and LeBron's attacking him one-on-one off the dribble, KCP can shade him to Gordon, to Jokic, and really make that difficult. I think if you're able to start LeBron through the post or in the corners off our sets, I think it gives us a little bit of offensive ingenuity that we haven't had in fourth quarters, and I think that's why we put them away. But do you like that, the LeBron kind of – I know it's not something we can do it all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of – it coexists with D'Lo having a good game, but I think Austin can also do that as well. I think that's something that we have to look into a little bit more as we go to Denver. Where are you at, I guess, with that idea? I thought LeBron off the ball was a huge part of kind of getting that offense going in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so that's another thing that was overshadowed by the whole – LeBron throwing a tantrum on the sideline thing, about the challenge call. That the first thing I noticed was we put Bron, and especially in the first half, we gave him like five or six positions where he got to post up in isolation. And Denver never sent help against smaller guys, against Jamal Murray, and you brought it up. He did against Aaron Gordon too as well. And scored, I think, twice, I want to say, against Aaron Gordon in the post. That's a big deal because that's less work for LeBron. Bron doesn't have to worry about reading the floor. It's a smaller portion of the floor. It's basically a one-on-one game. Denver's not going to come help. And they'll take their chances one-on-one against LeBron, and we expect them to win those. And then the second part is what you talked about. Bron crashing from the right corner off of as a secondary look for D'Lo as soon as Aaron Gordon
ball watches. Yeah.
So the difference, I think, and I think you alluded to it, Rui's been in that spot before, but Rui's ability to recognize whether he should crash or whether he should stay in that corner has been rough in the playoffs because sometimes he's wide open in the corner and he takes.
Why do you think that is? Yeah, why has it been rough in this series, you think? He was one of the best at that in the regular, to close the regular season. He was incredible. What is Denver doing to kind of take to scout that out?
I don't know I don't know if it's something that's Denver, that's something that Denver is doing. Sorry, I'm fumbling my words. I think it's more like, because Rui hasn't been involved in the offense and gotten into the flow of the offense as much as he did in the regular season, because the possessions are limited, I think when he gets the ball, it's just like whatever he feels is the safest play is the play he's going to make. Because this same game, there was a possession where Rui caught, and he corrected himself, so this is nice. There was a possession where Rui caught it in the corner. There was nobody in front of him. When I say nobody, he could have. Done a 360 dunk or something like that. Nobody was going to get to him. And he takes the three. He misses the three, and Denver gets the rebound. But I was just like, and then when I watched it, I was like, oh, man, I wish he had just caught it and went right to the rim. He would have probably drawn a foul at the very worst and gotten Jokic or Aaron Gordon with the foul. But the very next play, there's a really weak closeout, and he attacks the rim on it. And I think he scores a layup, if I'm not mistaken. We end up scoring on that possession. But that decision-making – now you put Bron in that spot instead to have to make the read based off of when Aaron Gordon is coming to help off of the D'Lo pick and roll. I think Bron is otherworldly IQ. He never looks at the possession like, oh, this is like, he's not a robot. You know, like every possession is different to him. He knows how to make his read separately. And I think it is what it is. It's just Bron's just better at running that. I mean, Bron's always going to be better than Rui in regards to so many things, if not everything. But I think Bron just read that better. He probably read it as if like, hey, I could stand in this corner and take the three, or Aaron Gordon's so out of position, I could just get an easy alley-oop dunk. Because there's also a chemistry, like with D'Lo and Bron, where D'Lo can make that pass and Bron's going to get it. So I think that's something too.
And I was going to follow up on that. Like watching these games back, Vinay, I don't think this is a Rui series. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm watching this, there's just no one for him to guard. And to your point, I think you're spot on. He's not involved offensively, right? Like, he's like, this is not a series he can get a million touches. So Denver's very unique in this. Most teams don't have three big physical dudes, or like just three big dudes that you can throw on LeBron, AD, and Rui. So that's usually Rui gets the kind of weakest of the three evils, right? So whoever's the weakest defender goes on Rui. And that's usually like a 6'6", 6'7", guy, right? But with Denver, it's a 6'11", dude. Like MPJ is not a great movement defender, but he's a tall, big dude that Rui can't just go through. And Denver is so disciplined. And the other end, like, Vinay, I don't know if MPJ is going to come back to earth. Like, I just don't know. He's had four straight good games. He's hit, I think, three or four threes in every single game. And every shot that goes up, I think, is going in from him. Mm-hmm. And Rui just cannot guard him. Like, he cannot stay with him. I hate, because this has been the kind of hot topic, and it's funny how, like, life works. This is probably a Taurean series, which, you know, makes it really rough. And I know that's, like, a tough thing to accept. But Taurean had a really good game. Again, I think Taurean's played really well off the bench. Yeah. He's really our only bench scorer that's scoring in this series. Hit a bunch of threes in that fourth quarter, and just a guy that at least can give some speed to the unit. And it's also a guy that's a little bit tougher to hide Jokic on, right? So it's a lot different for Jokic to guard Rui than to guard Taurean.
Yeah.
Taurean kind of stays in different portions of the floor where he's kind of more spread out, where Jokic kind of has to stick to AD. I don't think you should bench Rui. I think his kind of skill set isn't like, if we were playing the Sun, oh, I guess Suns are out, excuse me. But like Minnesota or something like that, I think you can play Rui a little bit more where you can kind of attack the guards. I think this series, like, this feels like more of a Taurean series. Are you with me on that? Like, I'm not saying like Rui shouldn't play. I just like, I watch him and I just don't think he can guard MPJ. But it's very similarly, like how he couldn't guard Clay, like with the Warriors, right? Like the Warrior series was rough for Rui. Was incredible against Memphis, was actually really good against Denver last year. But I think like this series in particular, it just doesn't feel like his series. But like, where are you at with that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the four guys that you trust are going to be, or the four guys that Ham's going to rock with is going to be obviously Bron, AD, Austin, and D'Lo. He's going to roll with those guys. Everybody else is kind of situational now at this point. Like, you've got to have at least four guys that you trust to play a majority of the game, to play winning basketball or execute winning that, which you think is winning basketball for most of the game. And I think for the Lakers, it's those four guys. Then that just means that, you know, Rui, Taurean, Gabe, Jackson, those other four guys are just interchangeable dudes, you know, that you just play based on who has the hot hand. It's not uncommon for teams to do that. You know, like there are teams that fifth spot is always, dude, the Lakers did it when we went to a championship, you know, like the fifth guy or the fourth and fifth guy were always just whoever was playing best. If it was Alex and Kuzma, they'd be Alex and Kuzma. Sometimes it would be Alex and, you know, Talen or something like that. Or it would be like Dwight or JaVale and somebody else. So it just, you just have to play it by ear. And I think Ham probably doesn't need to get married to any specific sort of player to be in that position and just go with kind of what makes the most sense. Taurean's also a low volume 3-point shooter. Like he can go possessions without, you know, long possessions without touching the ball and still be kind of locked in to knock down an open three. Sure. I don't know if Rui is built that way. I think he's a little more, has to be involved in order to stay warm in games and whatnot and stay involved in games. So that's just kind of the way I see it. You do run the risk of you do too much Taurean. Taurean's not really a rebounder like that. You know, that can get a little dicey too as well. So I think that's the reason they probably play Rui because they just want the size for rebounding and boxing out.
But they, They need Rui though to like be like, I don't know what it is. Like, there's games where Rui has a ton of boards, and there's some games like in game four where he just does not want to back out with any type of ferocity. With some conviction. Like, it's tough to kind of gauge. And I think he's a guy that also his offense kind of dictates his defensive and rebounding. He's not alone in that or unique. A lot of players are this way where their like offense kind of dictates their defensive engagement. This is another role thing, Vinay, that like bothers me, and I don't know where the blame should go with that. But like, again, you watch a team like New York where like it's very clear everybody is told you better box out or you don't play. And it just doesn't feel like we have the same type of bar. Like our barrier for entry is not that. So like that struggles. Another like thing I wanted to ask you, because I think this is interesting. Darvin Ham continues to go to these four guard units on the non-Jokic minutes, right? So like when Jokic is
four guard is Prince at the four, right? That's
what you're talking about? Okay. Yeah. So I'm basically coupling Taurean as a two guard in this unit, but it's like AD, Taurean, D'Lo, Gabe, and Spencer. I'm of the opinion, Vinay, like that's just not a unit that can step out onto the floor. It worked last game because like, I think D'Lo was hot. Gabe actually hit a three-pointer, which is insane. I just don't think that's a consistent unit that can play and hold the four. It did last game. Like it did. It was even or minus three. How do you see that going, I guess, in game five? I think Darvin's going to go to it again. And I'm a little bit concerned, I guess, in that. But that's another one of my concerns for game five. It's kind of our second units. These like really this propensity to go very small.
Yeah.
And I just don't think Spencer needs to play, to be honest. Like I think Gabe is doing a fantastic job on Jamal Murray. I just don't think you need Spencer Dinwiddie minutes, but where are you at with that, with the second unit, how it's shaping up?
Yeah, I don't know why he goes with that four guard unit. I'm assuming he's doing it because he's doing it in the non Bron minutes against that bench group that has it's the one that has Bron, Murray, Gordon at center, Justin Holiday. Who's the fourth guy that they have that's out there? Peyton Watson.
Peyton Watson. Yeah,
is the other guy. So that lineup effectively has two non-shooters. Two non-shooters and a small four. So I think he's just trying to maybe buy minutes for the rest of his guys against that lineup because that lineup shouldn't be an offensive threat. I remember, I think two pods ago, I think after game one or game two, we discussed that lineup specifically, not when Bron is part of a unit and then when AD is part of a unit. Mm-hmm. They don't win those minutes against those lineups because the lineups that they run, that Denver runs, has a lot more continuity. They've actually run those lineups quite a bit.
And we can't score. Like they're defensive first units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of good athletes, you know, like Peyton's a good athlete, Bron's a good athlete defensively. If he goes to it, honestly, Raj, you can't run any freelance offense against that unit.
Mm.
Like you can't run zero. It has to either be the AD and D'Lo pick and roll or AD isolations. There can be zero, absolutely zero freelancing with that because that unit is not scoring enough points. And it's not getting back defensively well enough in order for those lineups to work. And so I don't know at this point, you know, taking the what we would like part of it out of it and talking about the reality of it. I don't know if Ham is going to go away from that now.
Like, I don't think so either.
He's already done it. So he's going to do it again. I would just hope that they somehow decide that, hey, can we get some more direction for this lineup because we can't have Spencer freelancing. We can't have Taurean freelancing. Like when we had the game two collapse, that happened. The Spencer getting blocked at the rim was Spencer taking it upon himself to go. And then the Taurean Prince contested three that happened the play before that, before LeBron gets called back into the game to run the offense. So like we just can't have that again in Denver. I think that's the only way you can mitigate it, honestly.
The problem is like the nature of those units are of guards who just freelance in their like that's just their game. True. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of what Gabe and Spencer do, and even D'Lo to an extent. That lineup just hasn't played together very much this year, right? Just because of Gabe's reassertion into the lineup. I would like to stay a little bit bigger in those units. That's the place where I think you can kind of put Rui's minutes a little bit up, right? Let Rui play when Jokic isn't on the floor, right? So like Rui's not matched up with him or doesn't have to go and, you know, double him or whatever. I think that's a place where you can leverage Rui's kind of want to be an offensive guy and kind of run plays through him. But that's a place that you can lose the game in. And that's one of my concerns. But he's going to have to control the minutes. Like, I agree with that. I don't think your stars can play every minute. It's very clear they're gassed in the fourth quarter. So he's trying to buy time. And the only place you can buy time is when Jokic is not playing. I think the four guard, we're just too small. Like, our transition defense suffers. We can't rebound. And we don't get stops. I mean, Denver also puts out a very like defensive first unit that can't shoot. So I think that's kind of why we'll go very small. But
that's a role player. It's a role player heavy unit, which means that if those guys come out with a ton of energy and a ton of force, like, that can swing momentum back into Denver's favor. I would say, it swings momentum into Denver's favor, and then just kind of gives them more that starting unit more juice when they come back into the game. So I'm with you. I would like to see something better out of that. Like, I've seen people say that Max Christie should have taken Spencer's minutes. Like, at this point, I don't think it's going to happen. Like, I would be very surprised if they did that now. But I do agree. Like, probably putting a 3-and-D guy in that position would have made more sense. Max is a much better rebounder, kind of plays that 3-and-D role with much better gusto. Again, at this point in the season, I don't think it's going to happen. So that's what it's going to be. There was actually a question. George asked the question, why has Spencer struggled in this series? And I'll try to answer that first. Like, Spencer is not a guy who does very well with very limited touches. When he played with Dallas, he played as the counterpart to Luka. And he was getting a lot of touches. He was part of the offense quite a bit, getting a lot of shots. Lakers offense is not – and that type of offense, like, the Lakers offense is the type of offense where certain guys will get all the touches in the game and whatnot. And we already have our hierarchy set. So when he does get the ball, if he's not in rhythm, it's going to look bad. And look, honestly, that's normal for like tons of basketball players. Like, most basketball players are rhythm players, especially guards that, you know, their best skill is, you know, scoring the basketball. What do you think about that, Raj? Why is
Spencer? Yeah, it's tough. I think what happened to him is his jump shot also left him, you know, so like Spencer without a jump shot is it's really rough for him to get going. Yeah. And I think the messaging, which I think has been unclear throughout the roster, but it's very clear Spencer believes, if you listen to his post game, he's there to defend. Like, he's there to play defense. At least that's his belief. And there's games where he passes up shots. I think there's some moments where he takes some really wild adventures to the rim. I wish he was better. Like, I think Spencer's a guy, like, in the theory of this team, like, he's probably our best guard at attacking the rim, like, in terms of what the best idealized version of Spencer Dinwiddie, right, is, like, a guy who can attack the rim and be physical at the basket and get to the line. He's just in no offensive rhythm for that, which is I've kind of been advocating for him to just not play. I don't think you need him and Gabe and Austin and D'Lo in the rotation. That's too many guards when you already have enough forwards to kind of fill in. And Denver's not a team you want to, you know, lean small. So that's why I think he struggled. I just don't think he's in an offensive groove, and the playoffs kind of do that to guards who, you know, don't have a jump shot. So I that's why I think Spencer struggled, and no fault to him. I think he's playing hard. I think he's trying. I don't think this is a like lack of effort, or the Brooklyn Nets said Spencer was like throwing games while he was over there. I don't think it's that, but, What a season we've had. But I don't think it's any of that. I just think Spencer's struggling, and honestly wouldn't play him. Gabe's playing fine. Let him take those guards minutes.
Yeah. If I like your idea. Maybe it makes more sense to size up, squeeze some more Rui minutes in there if he's gonna lose some minutes from that starting group for Taurean and maybe reduce some of those Spencer minutes since you already have two ball handlers in Gabe and D'Lo, really. So we got that. You know, Anthony Davis played. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, just before I see some more questions in the chat, but before that, would you re-enter Vando into this? Like I say, Vando's healthy to go. I was first gonna say no, Vinay, but the way MPJ is shooting, like, I think we need one more athletic wing and like with high motor. And I have no idea what Vando looks like. You know, he's been, I don't know when his last game was. I think it was the in-season tournament was like Vando's last game, honestly.
Yeah, it might
back
be
in December. Yeah. But you're one game out from losing. I think you kind of got to play all the cards in your hand, even if you don't know what the value of them are. But these are the ones that you got. I think you got to kind of try it. Vando over Spence, I'd kind of be for that. If it takes Spence out, we're Where are you at with Vando? I think it's an interesting kind of peculiar situation where one of your top six players is coming back, but he's a very unique unicorn in this way that he's not an offensive player. So his whole thing is defense, and like the rhythm defensively is much different than the rhythm offensively.
True.
And I do think there's still a rhythm that's needed defensively. I think that gets underrated a lot of times when people return, but I think at least it gives Vando like a little bit more of a ramp. The chat says Boston was his last game. I don't even remember him in that game, honestly. But what do you think with Vando? Like, you think Vando should come back and play?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they're going to bring him back. Like, again, this is like the Max Christie thing. Like, I don't know. They haven't done it yet. And they were saying they're going to do it in game three. And then, you know, he doesn't do it in game three. He doesn't do it in game four. It would be very surprised for them to throw him in game five. They might do it. They might not do it. I think if you're going to have to carve out minutes for him, it's probably with that bench unit. Like, maybe you don't play Spencer. You play a little bit bigger. You put Vando on the floor for that unit, since Spencer's not really shooting lights off the floor anyways. The size probably helps you out. I don't think it's a situation where you can insert Vando in, you know, like major minutes. Again, we don't know what his conditioning looks like. We don't know how he's moving, you know, if it looks the same. I'm also kind of like, in my mind, I've just kind of told myself Vando's not coming back. I'm very, very annoyed that we keep getting Vando updates when it's just like, okay, dude. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
We're like, it's do or die every single game at this point. So it's like, it doesn't matter. Either if he's playing, then just let us know. If he's not, we're just don't need the update. So that's kind of my stance in regards to it. But yeah, if you have to play him, like if he's available and
if he's available, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to, because even if he's available, I don't think it's a guarantee that he plays. But if you have to play him, probably
would you enter him though? Would you play him like in this series? Like, would you re-enter him? I guess you don't have to tell me who you take out of the rotation, but like, would you like? Do you think he would provide value? Is my question?
Yes, for sure. If Vando is pre-injury Vando, like if he's back, if you know, I'm behind closed doors, I'm watching him practice and whatever, looks like he's pre-injury Vando, I would certainly play for sure. Like, I think there are minutes that you can buy with him where Denver can't really pick on the fact that he doesn't shoot. And he does give us value, like defensively and stuff like that. For sure. But I don't know if we'll get to that point. Raj, can I bring something up that I saw on Twitter, which I did, it came up after the game. And I bookmarked it because I wanted to remember it. And when I did my rewatch, or when I did my first watch, which was a replay of the game, I specifically looked for this. And I didn't see it happen once in the game. So maybe I missed it. But Worldwide Blob posted a tweet. And it was aimed at Laker fans. And it was in support of Ham. And he said, you know, Ham made a really great adjustment of putting LeBron James in the dunker spot. And him putting him in the dunker spot really kind of allowed LeBron to buy time for his legs to rest and, you know, be able to stay on the floor while also resting on the floor. And Roger, I watched the game, and I watched all of LeBron's possessions very, very closely, especially the ones where he was off the ball. LeBron wasn't in the dunker spot, like, exclusively, like at any point in the game. There's one point in the game where he's kind of in the dunker spot because he runs a side pick and roll with Austin Reeves and he ends up in the dunker spot. And he gets like a pass from Anthony Davis for like a reverse layup or something like that. But that wasn't him like coming down the floor and standing in the dunker spot. The only thing that was close to that was him, like you mentioned, in the fourth quarter, being in that right corner and crashing from the right corner. I may have missed it. But did you see that in the game? Because I don't remember that happening in the game at all at any point.
No, I don't. I don't remember. I wasn't watching for that, I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's occurred. And look, basketball is a flow sport where like players are going to end up in positions where they just didn't start, right? So, and I don't think Darvin placed LeBron in the dunker at any point. That's really not a spot he would be at, because that's really where AD operates from and kind of cuts from. So I didn't see that at all. I remember LeBron was putting the corners a bunch of times to help with the spacing, to kind of help him with the cuts. And then some of it was on the side ball screens that you're discussing. Some of it was at the top as well, attacking Jokic and pick and roll when Jokic was on AD and AD was out on the floor. So I didn't see that. I didn't notice that. That's just not a place that LeBron sits at anyway. Sometimes LeBron will go there and then he'll screen up, you know what I mean? Like sometimes he'll start from the dunker and go up to screen for Austin and for D'Lo. But no, I didn't see. I didn't even see World Wide Web post that, honestly. So I didn't even.
Yeah. I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't see it,
but like he posted that and I'm pretty sure it was him. Maybe unless it was somebody else, but the tweet got a ton of traction. Like this is a ton of people. That's why I say World Wide Web. He's got like a million followers or something like that.
Oh yeah. He's a huge follower.
And I was just like watching it and I was just like, oh my God, like this guy just told everybody something that like never happened in the game. And like, if you didn't watch the game, you might just be like blindly accepting it. Like, wow, you know, Darvin Ham made a really great adjustment. And I was like, well, he made adjustments for sure. Like we did stuff differently from even game three and game two and game four that worked in our favor and looked really good that we covered. But that wasn't one of the things. And I was just like, this is how misinformation works, Raj. Like these people just like nobody fact checked it. And I just happened to do a replay watch. And that's why I didn't see it. I'm not saying that he's bad at his analysis or something like that, but I was just like, it's kind of like what we described. Like sometimes you happen to see somebody in that position, but that's not what the intention of the play was. And it can kind of mislead people into thinking that like that's what was happening. But the reality was Braun was kicking butt because he was dominating all of his post isolations. He was crashing the glass every time they ran a pick and roll with somebody that didn't involve him. And he was getting himself easy looks, especially in that fourth quarter. And then Braun was running pick and roll to himself and getting really nice finishes against like an Aaron Gordon, Jokic pick and roll. So like, I thought he did a really good job there too as well. So it's just, like I said, like when I watched the thing about Braun getting upset about the challenge call and rewatch, I was like, okay, it's not that big of a deal. And then I see that tweet and I was like, no, Braun did way more than that. That was better. I don't know where this is coming from. Like, you watch the game. I think the point I'm trying to make here is the Lakers did so many small things that were really nice. The small things that were really good. Even with the loss that they had in game three, they still continued to adjust. It wasn't just something like box your guy out and you win the game. It was like, no, we're going to also do this too as well on offense to give ourselves a chance. So I thought that was really good. Yeah. Well, anything else that you saw from the game? Anything?
The last thing on like kind of my notes here is none of us wish for injury, but I thought Jamal Murray looked a little hobbled in that fourth quarter. Yeah. And I think that's a very interesting thing. And how, like, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not crazy enough to predict anything, but how series get close that weren't is like injuries or, you know, fluky stuff that comes that enters a series. And I think Jamal Murray, who's now questionable for, I 100% think he's going to play, but
100%,
I'm just going off the facts that are stated right now. He's questionable to play with you mentioned a right calf strain. I think that's a huge impact in this series. Jamal Murray's kind of the head of their kind of snake as on-ball guard, and he's a guy that we kind of load a lot of resources to defensively. He's also a guy we attack on the other end. And when Denver cut it to seven, there were a few plays where LeBron was kind of at the level of the screen and kind of Jamal Murray made some – like Jamal Murray and Jokic didn't turn the ball over in game two in the fourth quarter. Like this is the kind of comparison I'm going with. And Jamal Murray had two turnovers that, you know, just are very unlike him. And kind of, I thought it was because he was shaken up a little bit. But how does that impact the series for even if Jamal Murray goes from like 100 to 90 or 85? Like how does that, I guess, impact this series for your thought of this series going, or just in game five in general? Like how much does that, I guess, impact this game to you?
Yeah, I don't think if he's able to run, I think he's going to play. And I think it won't affect his confidence in shooting the ball and confidence in playing. But I think it might affect his physical ability to get like the separation that he wants or get the explosion, you know, when he's trying to score or the full kind of jump into his like pull-up jumpers and stuff like that. It might affect some of that a little bit. Obviously, we don't want him to have anything serious going on, but, you know, calf strains, they can pop up. They're like the hamstring strains. Like they can pop up at any time in the middle of the game, dribbling up the floor or, you know, like crashing for a defensive rebound. It can pop up any time. So who knows what will happen. But I mean, look, from a competitive standpoint, anything that gives us an edge, obviously we don't want injuries to be the reason, but anything that gives the Lakers an edge, because we know that our margin of error is like really razor thin against this team, helps the Lakers to some degree. And, you know, I don't want to say his injury helps us because it really doesn't. Like, I think Denver's just too good of an execution team. where they'll say, okay, Jamal's out, we're just going to go with the next guy, and we're going to run these sets and do this and do that, and you know, have no drop off in kind of whatever our offensive production is. The one thing I don't want is if he's unable to play or if he looks hobbled. I would really want the Lakers to not take that lightly, because we have seen many games where the Lakers don't take their opponent seriously, and it's an opponent that's much, much lower than what they are, you know, in terms of caliber of team. And we get it, you know, we get beat because of that. And so, or it ends up being a way tighter game than it needs to be. So whatever happens with him, you know, I think you and I both think that he's going to play. I don't think it's going to be anything.
Oh yeah.
The injury itself was just kind of random, you know, end of the game. He takes a screen and he goes for like a pull-up jumper, and then he kind of grabs his calf after he lands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't hobbling too much, but again, you never know how your body responds to stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and look, if it's bothered at all, I think it's a big part of this series. Jamal Murray, like, you know, people don't think of him as like an explosive guard, but like, he's a guy that really plants his foot and, you know, raises up in a way that, like, that, you know, impacts him. But I think he'll be fine. I just, like, if that's something that comes up, I think it's going to be interesting. Like, last question I guess I see on here is the Christian Wood part of this. I think we're done. I think I'm good on the Christian Wood.
Yeah,
it's part of this. Just season and series. I just don't understand why they would want it out there that he's available for game four. Well, he wasn't even available, right? I think he was eventually ruled out. I don't remember. Or was he available? I don't remember.
He was available for game four.
Okay, he was. Yeah, but it's like, I don't understand why they would want that out there if Darvin is not going to play him. Like, I don't get the reasoning behind the phone tag that they're doing with the news, but in any case,
I think his agent is like making sure that people know he's available.
Yeah. Great. But no, I'm not with playing Christian Wood. I just don't think this is a series for him. I've liked Jackson Hayes in that backup big minutes. Are you with me on that? Are you good on Christian Wood as well?
Yeah. I don't know where his conditioning's at. I don't know like how you'd play him. It seems like if Vando and him were both available, they'd basically be cannibalizing each other's minutes. Like if there was a guy who was clearly hurting us that was unplayable, like in the same position, like if Jackson was just cut like a complete mess every time he was on the floor, then it'd be like, okay, go play Christian, because it can only get better, we would hope, from here, or it'll be just as bad. But yeah, I'm with you, dude. Like we've been fine. Like I, the thing that worries me is you try to throw a wrench in the rotation and it hurts you way more than you realize, because the guys are not used to playing with each other and rust and conditioning and all that sort of stuff. So I wouldn't do that. If the Lakers somehow manage to make a miraculous comeback and win this series, then I think you can revisit like, hey, okay, next series, we're going to need to add him, get him back into the lineup and get him used and stuff like that. Same thing with Vando too as well.
Yeah, me too. Do you have anything else Lakers related? I want to close with this because I think this is just absolutely – so the whole timeline is kind of burning the Suns, no pun intended.
Oh, yeah. They're smoking. They're smoking the Suns right now, yeah.
I just want to read one quote, and I can't believe this is real, Vinay. Yeah. How is this real? Kevin Durant never felt comfortable with his role in Phoenix's offense.
Yeah,
alongside Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, the sources said, and like I'm sure Shams, this is a Shams article. This is not just from anybody writing this. The sources said Durant had persistent issues with the offense, feeling that he was being relegated to the corner far too often, and not having the proper designs to play to his strengths as the offense was built around pick and rolls. How is that a real? How is that a real thing that can be written about Kevin freaking Durant? What did Durant think was going to happen in this offense around Booker and Beal? Or Kevin Durant think he has no charge of this? He has no like he's just a robot that Frank Vogel tells where to stand? I don't get it. I can't believe this is the story that's coming out after the Brooklyn mess, after, you know, the asking for trade from wherever he's at now. It's just, I can't believe we're here. But I just want to close with that quote, because it's amazing. It's impeccable media. It's impeccable source. It's exactly what the NBA feeds into.
They love it.
Do love it, and it's just winning a battle and losing the freaking war. But yeah, just any thoughts on that?
Shams is the fellow is the lead representative of the Brown delegation of sports media. So
I'm not blaming Shams for this.
I support him because he's willing to write this and put this out there too. But like it very much reads like just running excuses for the star player. And I get it. You know that's kind of what these roles have morphed into. Woj does it too for certain players. Chris Haynes, we know, does it for Dame Lillard all the time, and even you know sometimes for AD and Bron. Like it's a very normal thing for reporters to do this sort of stuff, but all this, like your point exactly, like the lack of agency by the player, or like the lack of accountability from the player is always fascinating to me, because these guys practice 8 to 9 hours a day. They sit in film sessions with assistant coaches and the head coach for like an hour or two a day. Maybe not every day, but they do their film sessions and stuff like that. And it is always funny to me that these, especially from the star players, that this thing comes out, this kind of conversation comes out, because you have ample opportunity to go to a head coach and be like, yo, I think I'm being put off. Like, I think you should include me in the offense, like a little bit more. Like, I think I'm being left off. And of course, you're Kevin Durant. Nobody's going to tell you no. They'll be like, no, we'll find a way to, you know, like any coach is going to be like, if you feel that way, let's try and find a way to incorporate you a little bit more into the offense in a way where you are, you know, that you want. Any team that has a superstar or a star of Kevin Durant's caliber, that superstar is actively going and saying that, or is able to go and say that. So when this kind of stuff gets posted, it always cracks me up, because it's just like, come on, dude. Like, I don't have to be an NBA player to know how much time you spend with the head coach. You know what I mean? Like, you, I know you can say it.
Also, Vinay, Kevin Durant had one of his fucking most incredible offensive years ever. He averaged 27 a game on 50 from the field, 40 from three, and I'm pretty sure it was 90 from the line. 50, 40, 90. He had a 50, 40, 90 year. You must have been put in pretty okay situations offensively. You didn't. You averaged 27 a game. I just like, that's the stuff. And again, it's this passive aggressive stuff that like, I'm sure Frank Vogel's in there going, bro, you're in every film session. You don't say a damn thing. Like when I go over the offense, when I go over the defense, you guys just say okay, and you go out on the court. Again, I'm not in their locker rooms. I don't know what's going on. I don't have sources with Frank Vogel. I don't have sources with the Phoenix Suns. It's just, how is this the story that gets put out? Why is it not, oh, man, Minnesota just kicked our ass. We need to be better. You know what I mean? Instead, it's like, oh, yeah, our coach did not design enough actions to get me going. What? Like, that's stuff that's, like, really just annoying to me to, like, for that to come out. And I get that's the NBA media landscape, and I'm not attacking it from like a business standpoint. I get it. And coaches are the lowest hanging fruit, so they're the first grabbed. That is just rich from Kevin Durant. Like that is just absolutely rich. I don't know. Again, I'm not in Kevin Durant's circle, so I don't know exactly if this is his doing. I'm just assuming that this is where Shams is getting that from. So
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, I absolutely. I think when they hired Vogel, like the first thing I said, I can't remember if they hired Vogel before. I think they hired Vogel before they did the Brad trade. But when they hired Vogel and I saw like the roster they were building, and then like, you know, they had DeAndre on the team, but they didn't really have like a proper four on the team. Like they didn't have like a big team. They had like a small team with DeAndre at the five. I was just like, oh, okay. Like I remember telling a buddy of mine, I was like, they're not building a team that's Vogel's, like the type of team that Vogel would want. They're not playing like a big team or whatever. And then they made the trade. They made the trade for Brad. And when they made the trade for Brad, I was just like, oh, okay. They didn't hire Vogel to run the offense. Like they hired Vogel to figure out what the defense is going to be with whatever the end result roster ends up being. And that's basically what happened. Like he played probably the guys that gave him the best chance outside of his three stars. And those guys just couldn't do it. And Raj, a big part of that was the three stars not being able to defend their positions. Jaden McDaniels can't put up – you can't – like, if you're a star, Jaden McDaniels can't score any points on you. I'm sorry. Like, if you're guarding Anthony Edwards, can't be able to guard you and put up 35 a night. That means you're not a star. You're not able to do your job. I can't blame the coach for that all the time. And it is what it is, you know, that it you know, we don't worry about the Suns like that. You know, I feel bad for Frank Vogel. But I remember I did a rant along with this will be my last thing. I remember I did a rant the first year that we had Russ and Frank. And I did it. I want to say like, it was like a solo rant. I was so mad. I don't know what I was. It was like a Saturday morning or something. And I just said out loud, I was like, dude, our front office has to pick. Are you going to play? Are you going to get a coach that runs, that knows how to run an offense that has like Russ, Braun, AD, and these role players that you have? Or are you going to commit to Frank Vogel? And you have to commit one way or the other. You have to commit to what the coach wants to do, or you have to commit to whatever the player roster of players you have and a coach that can maximize what that is. Yep. And I don't think they did that. I think they did what we did. We traded for Russ and we had Frank, and then we built a roster that doesn't match what Frank wants to do. And then got up. And then we put, what was the theme the entire season? Russ versus Frank. It was always the theme the entire season. And the Lakers eventually fired Frank. They bring in Ham. Ham gets Russ to commit to coming off the bench, blah, blah, you know, for half the season. And then we end up trading Russ. But that matters. You know, there's the same way in the U.S. system, you have the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative branch. It's all checks and balances. There's the front office, there's the coaching staff, and then there's the players. Like, there has to be some form of checks and balances between all of those sort of things. So it's just, you know, I don't think the Suns necessarily did a good job. And I think Ishbia is going to, their owner is going to blame it on Vogel. And it sounds like the players are blaming it on Vogel too. So now when you have two branches of the government, the basketball government body blaming the one group, you know, that makes it tough.
Again, like, I'm sure Vogel's looking at it like, look, Bradley Beal missed like 50 games. You know what I mean? Yeah. However many games Bradley Beal played. And so Beal's pissed at Vogel, and I don't know what they're mad about, whatever he was mad about. But, like, you know?
Dude, respect to Beal for playing against Anthony Edwards, but Beal was getting smoked by a – they had to put like Josh Okogie on him or something like that. Like, this is the only chance that they had to maybe slow him down. But even then, like, I don't know. If your stars cannot defend their positions, they are no longer stars.
Right.
Like, offense is like, the NBA needs to go away from this idea. And I think NBA fans have to go away from this idea that, like, if I'm an incredible offensive talent, I'm a star player. And to some degree, that's true. But we'll take the other game two of Clippers and Mavs. If Luka doesn't play defense against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and win those matchups, they don't win that game. Your stars have to be able to defend in the modern NBA. And if you don't, you're not winning anything. That's all I'm thinking about.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see. Right. We'll see. Well, hopefully our stars do tomorrow.
We're hoping for it. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, with our last thoughts, you know, I think Raj, we both hope that we get a repeat of game four. Lakers are able to, whatever way, we don't care if it's ugly, pretty, 1 point, 2 points, 10 points, whatever it is. We hope the Lakers can get a win and force game six. And if they don't, you know, we'll do our end of season review and whatnot and start thinking about the offseason stuff. But tomorrow, again, do or die. Lakers got to be ready for that Denver altitude and Denver intensity. I think they'll be very locked in and want to try and blow us out. So I'm hoping that we get the best version of everybody tomorrow night. So as always, for the folks, thank you for tuning in with us on this Sunday night, late Sunday night. As always, we'll have this up. You can rewatch this on Raj's Twitter feed or my Twitter feed. You can replay the video if you joined us midway through. If not, I'll post the Apple and Spotify links underneath the Twitter videos once I get them uploaded, so you can follow it there too. But as always, we appreciate you, whether you like, share, subscribe. And whether you're watching this during the day or during the evening, we hope you have a wonderful day. And if nothing else, we'll catch you in the next one. Take it easy.